Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the GLP first half FY 2014 earnings release conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Thursday, the 14th of November, 2013. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Ms. Amrita Gaurang. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining our first half 2014 earnings conference call. This call is being webcast, so I encourage you to join along to follow along with our slides. You can access the webcast at our website, where we have also posted our earnings release, presentation, and supplemental disclosure, as well as our announcement that we closed a China fund today. This evening, you'll hear from Jeff Schwartz. He's the co-founder of GLP and chairman of the executive committee. He's going to be providing an overview of our results and discuss the launch of our China fund. Jeff will be followed by Ming Mei, our co-founder and CEO, who will further discuss our business and exciting opportunities in our market. Our CFO, Heather Cia, will then provide an overview of our earnings. We will close the call with a Q&A session, like always, to allow as many people as possible to ask questions. We request that each participant ask a maximum of two questions together, including follow-ups. Thank you. I'll now hand it over to Jeff.
Thank you, Amrita, and thanks all of you for joining us this evening. As you've likely seen, there are a number of important themes to cover this evening. First, in terms of earnings, China remains the key driver of our performance, with revenue growing 39% year-on-year, thanks to continued rent growth and strong leasing momentum. Leasing was strong across the company. In China, second quarter new leases were up 60% year-on-year and up almost three times on a quarter-on-quarter basis. In Japan, we've seen a rent increase of 3% on those leases being renewed, the strongest rental growth we have seen since we started the business here in 2002. In addition, we have today announced the launch, I should say the closing, of a new $3 billion China Logistics Fund, CLF Fund 1. We are very proud to be partnering with an all-star group of global investors in what is the world's largest China-focused logistics infrastructure fund. In the last six months, we have significantly expanded our fund management platform. Following the launch of CLF Fund 1 and the recently announced sale of nine properties to GLP J-REIT, our fund management platform now stands at $11.4 billion of assets under management. This is in line with our stated strategy, enabling us to strategically scale our business while delivering superior risk-adjusted returns for our shareholders. Turning to slide five, which provides some details around CLF Fund 1. Six leading global institutions are investing more than $3 billion alongside GLP over a three-year subscription agreement to develop modern logistics facilities in China. GLP is retaining a 56% stake, ensuring alignment with our partners. The fund attracted incredibly strong interest, with the offering significantly oversubscribed. This transaction is transformational for GLP, providing significant capital to support our sustainable long-term growth while enhancing the returns on our invested capital. While we are unable to disclose our fee structure, on average, the fund management platform increases the IRR on GLP's investment by approximately 400-500 basis points. It is consistent with our strategy to focus on the world's best markets and grow our fund management platform. GLP will seed the fund with land to support 1.8 million sq m of leasable area. Future developments will benefit from GLP's strong land reserve. We have secured a $1 billion credit facility from China Merchants Bank on behalf of the fund. Turn to slide six. This transaction will enable us to further strengthen our leading position in China, where we are bigger than our next eight competitors combined. It is a testament to the strength of our team on the ground and the organization we have built in China. GLP will act as asset manager, meaning the fund will benefit from our unrivaled operational experience and expertise. Equity commitments in the fund stand at $1.5 billion, with total investment capacity of $3 billion over the three-year subscription or investment period. We have partnered with six of the world's leading investors from Asia, Europe, and North America. Four of these six are new to GLP's fund management platform, of which three are national pension or sovereign wealth funds. Turn to slide seven. It is our opinion that China is the world's best market for investment in logistics. The country has only 1/14 the amount of warehouse stock per capita of that in the U.S. or the U.K. Even if China needed only half the amount of warehouse space of the U.S. or the U.K. on a per capita basis, it would need a total market supply of 3.4 billion square meters, a market opportunity at today's cost with no inflation and no development margin in excess of U.S. $2 trillion. As China's GDP growth continues to outpace the rest of the world, current supply of facilities falls far, far short of meeting demand, which is being driven by strong domestic consumption. 80% of our China portfolio is geared towards this domestic consumption, making us well-positioned to benefit from the country's ongoing transition to a consumption-led economy. The fund we are announcing today and closed today locks in long-term liquidity to capture this very significant growth opportunity. We expect to continue to grow our development starts in China by 20 to 25% annually. Setting up the fund allows us to fund this growth long-term. Slide 8 shows how our fund management platform has grown as a result of this fund. Today, our fund management platform stands at U.S. $11.4 billion of assets under management. At this time last year, it was $2.6 billion. This comprises $5.8 billion of invested capital and U.S. $5.6 billion of committed capital not yet deployed or invested. Fund management revenues in second quarter fiscal year 2014 were $12 million U.S. dollars, up 40% from a year earlier. These comprise asset and property management fees of $9 million U.S. and property development fees of $3 million U.S. We expect management fees to continue growing as the committed capital is invested, and we further build our fund management platform. Slide 9 outlines the key financial highlights for the first half. First half group revenue was $277 million U.S. dollars. This was 19% lower than the same period last year, mainly due to the contribution of Japanese properties to GLPG REIT last December when we launched it, and FX movements. Adjusted for these items, revenue increased 15%. First half fiscal year 2014 group EBIT was up 8% with PATMI stable. Adjusting again for the contribution of properties to GLPG REIT and FX movements, EBIT and earnings were up 44% and 56% respectively, driven by revaluation gains from our development completions and rent growth in China. On slide 10, we highlight the key operational themes and achievements of the first half. We have a strong market-leading portfolio with high stabilized lease ratios across China, Japan, and Brazil, reflecting the healthy demand in all of our markets. Our development platform continues to deliver sustainable growth. First half value creation in our development portfolio was over $110 million U.S. dollars, and our development pipeline stands at 9.2 million square meters, up more than 60% year-on-year, and representing $3 billion U.S. dollars of investment. This is expected to generate approximately $1 billion of value creation over the near term. Our financial position remains robust and provides a solid foundation at which we continue to grow. We have low leverage, strong cash position, and a healthy debt maturity profile. And lastly today, Ming and I, during our board meeting here in Tokyo, signed four-year extensions to our agreements, committing to stay with GLP through 2018. We look forward to continue to grow GLP to be the best provider of logistics infrastructure in the world. And with that, I now proudly, very proudly, turn this over to my partner, Ming, who will further discuss the progress we've made over the last 6 months.
Well, thank you, Jeff. Good evening, everyone. Just want a heads up, I'm under the weather a bit with a cold, so if I sound not so upbeat, there's no correlation with the condition of business. As some of you have called me afterward in the previous calls asking me about the tone of my voice. Let's start looking at our China business on slide 12, one of our key growth markets. We continue to see high-level demand for our facilities in China. Both new and expansion leases and lease renewal were very strong. We registered 575,000 square meters of new and expansion leases in the second quarter. That's up 60% year-on-year. Rents on renewal were up 6.9% in the second quarter. We expect this number to continue to grow as we continue to see a strong demand for modern facilities. Domestic consumption remained the key driver of this demand. This is evidenced by the recent major leases we signed with e-commerce players as well as consumer goods companies such as VIP Shop, Tencent's Yixin.com, Hire, Watson's, as well as third-party logistics providers such as Deepang, DHL, and ThankYou. E-commerce now represents 22% of our total lease area in China, compared to just 4% in the financial year 2010. We have a strong development pipeline. In the second quarter, we acquired additional 800,000 square meter of land to support future development and our customer demand. We convert all this from our land reserve. Our land conversion rate for this reserve has been very strong at about 70% over the last 12 months. Furthermore, in a market where land supply is incredibly tight, our land reserve stands at almost 12 million square meters of GFA. That's up 24% year-on-year, even after converting a significant amount of land reserve into our land bank. This will continue to provide visibility on sustainable value creation over the next 3 to 4 years. Our development momentum continued through the first half. We started development start at 1.1 million square meters. That's up 40% from last year. And we remain confident in meeting our target of 2.5 million square meters of new starts for the full year. We also continue to complete new developments with 40% increase year on year for the first half, and we on target to complete 2 million for the year. Another reason we feel confident that we can meet our full year target is that we recently completed our biannual customer survey earlier this month, covering approximately 20% of our lease areas. Results were positive, with close to 90% of customers expecting higher business growth in the coming years, while 80% of customers expect growth at least 25%, and they will take demand over the next three years. Now we move to slide 13, just to give a snapshot of our portfolio in China. Rent growth within the portfolio was robust, underpinned by strong customer demand and limited supply. Average rental rates increased 5% year-on-year, while same-store net operating income was up 7.8% in the first half. Growth and development led to a 36% year-on-year growth in net asset value to $5.1 billion in China. The stabilized lease ratio in China is 90%, remains stable with a domestic consumption-focused portfolio at 95% lease. Now we turn to our Japan business on slide 14. The economic policy implemented in the last 9 months have resulted in a tangible improvement in confidence. We're already seeing the impact of this. With customers agreeing to higher rental increases, on average the last 12 months, we've seen a 3% increase on renewals. Demand for our facility continues to be driven by systematic supply chain modernization to seek meet the requirement of growing e-commerce sector. We have a strong leasing pipeline and accelerating development momentum. GLP Japan Development Venture portfolio continued to make good progress. We recently started the development of GLP Zama, a new 132,000 square meter multi-tenant facility located in the greater Tokyo area. In the second quarter, we acquired additional 240,000 square meter of land for future development, and we remain confident in meeting our target of 400,000 square meter development start for the year. The next slide gives you a snapshot of Japan portfolio, including asset under management and GLP JREIT. As you can see, 84% of properties are in the prime market of Tokyo and Osaka, which are seeing strong economic growth. The lease ratio remained very high at 99%. Rent was stable in the second quarter, with tenant retention rate and weighted average lease expiration both very healthy. On slide 16, look at our market and a leading portfolio in Brazil. Occupancy remained very high at 95%, and we have a very long weighted average lease expiration period of 8 years. And our development pipeline remains very healthy at 800,000 square meters. And for that, I'd like to hand over to Heather to review our financial highlights.
Thanks, Ming. Please turn to slide 18. This slide highlights China revenue and EBIT for the second quarter. In local currency terms, China revenue increased by 34% year-on-year, primarily driven by strong leasing. EBIT excluding revaluation was up 44%. Results were comparable in U.S. dollar terms. As we look forward and see the impact of China Logistics Fund on our earnings, we will fully consolidate the fund as GLP has a 56% interest in the management control. The fee income we earn for the China fund is eliminated during consolidation. The 44% fee income we earn will show up in the earnings, pardon me. We turn to slide 19. Now look at the first half as a whole. Revenue increased 36% in local currency terms, with the EBIT excluding revaluation up 39%. Again, results were comparable in U.S. dollar terms. Turning to Japan results on slide 20, the JV bars represent the net impact arising from asset disposals to the J-REIT. On a comparable basis, excluding the J-REIT impact, 2Q revenue was down 5% in local currency terms, and EBIT down 1%. These were primarily due to one-off dividend income of JPY $146 million from GLP Japan Income Partner One last year. The U.S. dollar numbers were impacted by the depreciation of the Japanese yen. Turn to slide 21. For the first half, and adjusting for the J-REIT, Japan revenue was down 8% and EBIT down 9% in local currency terms. Slide 22 summarizes the overall valuation and breakdown of our portfolio, which now stands at U.S. dollar 16.8 billion, an increase of 16% from a year ago. Valuation of our China portfolio has grown 4% quarter on quarter and 25% year on year to U.S. 7.4 billion. Our Japan portfolio comprises U.S. dollar 7.6 billion of assets, including the J-REIT portfolio. China now represents 59% of our group net asset value, up from 44% just a year ago. Japan comprises 29%, Brazil makes up 5%, and the remaining 7% is a net cash held in Singapore today for our future growth. Turning to slide 23, this shows our strong balance sheet with U.S. $1.4 billion cash at hand and a low net debt to assets ratio of 12%. On a look-through basis, our leverage stands at 15%. Our net debt to EBIT ratio stands at 3.7 times. Slide 24 shows our debt maturity profile as of end of September. Our weighted average debt maturity was 4.7 years, up from 3.2 a year earlier. And 70% of GLP debt matures in fiscal year 2017 and beyond. Fixed rate borrowings constituted 73% of GLP's total borrowing. Finally, on slide 25, this is our debt maturity breakdown detailed by country. With that, I will hand back to Ambika.
Desmond, can we now open the call up for questions?
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We will now begin the question and answer session. You may ask two questions at each request. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you would like to cancel a request, you can also press the pound or hash key. There will be a short silence while participants register for questions.
Okay.
The first question comes from the line of Tata Goe from Religare. Please ask your questions.
On Brazil. As I understand, the lease ratio as well as the valuation actually comes down. Is there a particular reason in terms of, you know, the outlook for the Brazil operations? Thanks.
The lease ratio was one move out that we expected, that we've been working with the customer for a long time, and we have a number of prospects to release that space. But that's something we actually underwrote in the acquisition. We knew that was happening. They were building their own facility. And that's well in hand. And the impact on NAV was purely a function of FX, not of true valuations in real terms.
Understood. Okay. Sorry, I just have a quick follow-up question on the China fund. So the seed amount that you're putting in, $1.8 million. Can I just know how much is that being valued on a dollar terms?
It's US dollar $339 million. That's corresponding to the 1.8 million square meters that we contribute as seed assets.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you for your question. Next question comes from the line of Donald Chua from CIMB Securities. Please ask your question.
Hi. Actually, I have two questions. One is regarding the Shanghai Free Trade Zone. I would just want to understand how management sees this and how do you think GLP could benefit from this launch? That's the first question. The second question is on competition. I think there are a lot of talks that big logistics companies like Taobao is starting to build their own facility. I just wanted to maybe tap the view of you guys. Whether you think this is an opportunity for collaboration or do you think they see this as a threat, and how would the GLP deal with this? Thanks.
Okay. Well, on the Shanghai Free Trade Zone, I think this is you will see this is the first step of China to experimenting with more reforms and open up. So just like kind of like China opened up Shenzhen back in 1979 with a free trade zone. We believe that this whole thing will be is kind of unknown territory right now because but one thing we see is that the commitment to experiment and to change. One thing we see is that this program is different in the sense that in the previous experiment zones, they will have a list from central government of what could be done in the zone, and you can only do those things. Here, they actually provide a negative list. What I mean by that is that they only tell you what you can't do, and that means that you can experiment with everything else. And from what we hear is that the goal ultimately is they're going to reduce that negative list more and more as they feel like they feel more comfortable. Overall, the financial sectors, the service sectors, and the import and export sector, trading companies, will see a big benefit. We are already seeing demand shot up strongly in the free trade zone for high quality facilities, and rental growth is very very strong. We will stand to benefit from the facilities we have in there, which we will have a total about close to 300,000 square meters in the free trade zone in the Waigaoqiao. And I think more importantly is that this will spread out to the rest of Shanghai and the rest of the country as they will have more of these free trade zones across the country going forward, and overall it will stimulate the domestic economy more. In regard to competition on the likes of Taobao, Alibaba, you know, I look at this, it just shows you how much demand is strong, how strong demand is from this sector, is that we couldn't possibly satisfy all the demand as fast as we build them. We have been meeting, and we've been talking to all customers, including Alibaba, of seeing ways to support them. We do not see them as a competitor, and they do not view us as a competitor. We're actually going to be working, and you know, not just with them, but with everyone in the e-commerce sector. There will be locations where they would decide to build what makes sense. But I do not expect, and so far their intention is not to build their own spaces. If you look at besides Alibaba, you know, 360buy and others, they continue to lease a lot of space from us. And so I would say that from where we were when we first entered market in 2003 in China, it was 100% owner-occupy market. And now we are actually seeing a strong movement to rental. And even traditional state-owned companies that are used to building everything themselves, including including their kindergarten schools for their own employees, are leasing from us. So even traditional state-owned companies like China Resources, China Oil and Food, these companies are leasing from us. So I think this trend of leasing from a public provider platform like us will continue.
Thanks, Bing.
Thank you for your question. Next question comes from the line of Michael Lim from UBS. Please ask your question.
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Ming. Good evening.
Hey, Michael.
Hi. My question is on the China Fund. So of the 1.8 million square meters that you're putting in as seed assets, how much of it comes from land help for future development, and what percentage is pre-stabilized assets?
It's actually roughly half and half, half from land bank and half from early stage of under development.
But none from the land reserve. It's actually land on the balance sheet.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's about 10 assets and 10 assets.
Yeah, but no, number of assets.
It's early stage.
Right.
Okay.
So the requirement is that has to be a project under development that's not more than 25% complete yet.
Yeah, so it's things that we broke around in the last 2 months or so.
Yeah.
It's all land that we acquired since just a year ago. So
if projects that were more than 25% complete, it will remain complete on our own balance sheet.
Okay. And you also mentioned that the China Fund will have a right of first refusal, and they will take on the assets provided it meets their investment criteria. So how different is the fund's investment criteria from GLP's?
There's no right of first refusal. It's, Ming, you want to describe it? Yeah. Ming and I were about to talk at the same time, so yeah.
Our requirement of returns are the same as our investors, so there's no difference in that. What is different is that the fund will only undertake projects that are 100% owned. So in the sense that if we do joint venture with an airport, do joint venture with a local government or seaport, those projects will go onto GLP's balance sheet and not into the fund because just the complication nature of the joint ventures. And also acquisition projects, or if we acquire projects that have development less than 75% of vacant land for future development, that would be also most likely go into our own balance sheet as well. So we want to keep the development fund simple and just focus on 100% owned projects.
Okay. Thank you. I think I used up my two questions, so I'll come back if there are no more. Thank you.
Okay.
Great.
It was a good question.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, you may press star 1, or you may submit your questions via webcast. The next question comes from the line of Yvonne Woon from Credit Suisse. Please ask your question.
Hi, guys. Very quickly, I guess everybody's a buzz about the whole e-commerce thing. You mentioned that your exposure right now is about 22. I'm just trying to get a gauge of what it would be if we include the indirect exposure, if you have that. And in terms of in the longer run, whether you would have a percentage that you would be comfortable with in terms of your entire portfolio exposure to e-commerce in particular. And my second question would be, in terms of the same store NOI, the percentage number looks to be slowing or moderating year on year. So just trying to get a bit more color there, whether it's something I'm missing. Thank you.
Okay. the thing is that in the 5-6 years time, you will not hear the word e-commerce because every retailers will have an e-commerce. Internet would be just it'd be internet plus retail on every business. So from that sense, if 80% of business is domestic consumption, somehow it's going to be e-commerce related. That's to answer your broad question. But to answer your specific question, 22%, what else is included? If you include the logistic companies that deliver on behalf of Alibaba, on behalf of 360buy or Amazon, I would say the number probably increased to the 30%, higher than 30% probably. So we currently only displayed it in logistic and e-commerce. We don't have it combined into one.
E-commerce becomes it just commerce.
Yeah.
And it's quickly becoming that. So it's almost impossible to do that. Pure play e-commerce companies account for 22%, but every one of our customers, if they're not involved in e-commerce, will have a problem. And we're uniquely positioned and well positioned in that we are the storefront for e-commerce. I mean, space that would have been leased in retail spaces becomes logistics space, and the requirements for high quality facilities, for well located facilities so they can do same day delivery, becomes paramount. So it becomes more important than ever to get the best facilities in the best locations, and that works very well for us.
Is there a certain point that you want to go up to in terms of the exposure to the direct e-commerce players for your portfolio?
I think we don't have a particular target on what percentage will go e-commerce, but I think we would be more target on the quality of the company itself and the growth prospect of that company itself.
Thank
you,
the NOI, same store NOI numbers?
Okay. NOI makes up two components. One is pure rental growth and also occupancy. So if you compare the same set of spaces year over year, part of the spaces, as occupancy gets to a certain point, get to 95-96%, it has less room to increase. So what's left is pure rental growth, and if you look at it, pure rental growth, it's about 5% right now, and we continue to see that to continue into the near future because the supply continues to be tight.
And not to beat up on
the, and the renewal was 6.9%.
Not to beat on the same point too long, but I think the important thing to note is when we talk about space that we're leasing to e-commerce companies. Everything we do is very generic. We're not doing specialty buildings that aren't attractive to other customers. And if you believe long-term in the growth of e-commerce, you don't need to be right on who the winners and losers are because the space we're building will be used for e-commerce for commerce, which, e-commerce becomes just commerce, for the next 50 years.
For
the logistics companies. So we're building well-located, generic buildings. A lot of the e-commerce companies today don't use clear height. They're using manual systems, manual pick and pack. They're not using automated systems. They don't need 9-meter, 10-meter clear, what we built. They could get by with 4-meter clear. Some of them have asked us to build low clear height. We won't do that. That's a specialized building where you're making a particular bet on a particular company. You build a well-located, well-designed, generic facility, and you're betting on a secular trend towards e-commerce and towards growth in domestic consumption, and that's a position we like playing in.
Thank you for your questions. Next question comes from the line of Jason Yeo from Goldman Sachs. Please ask your question.
Hi, Jeff, Ming, and Heather. I just have a question on development gains. What percentage is coming from China, and what is the 110 million figure on a PATMI level? Thanks.
For this quarter, actually, development gain more or less will show up in the change in fair value in the financials. So if you look at this quarter, there's on a consolidated basis, there's 107 million and 96 million from China, 11 million from Japan, and you can figure out the rest actually come from the JCEs. So primarily the development profit coming from China completion as well as it's leasing up and rental growth.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your question. The next question comes from the line of An Chen from AEW. Please ask your question.
Hi, thank you for arranging the call. I guess I have two questions. The first one is, what does the setting up of the China Fund mean for the company's development start targets in China? I guess for this year, you know, you originally gave a target of about 2 million square meters, but obviously with the fund now, how does that target grow? That's the first question. And then the second question is, does the fund actually have a geographical breakdown or I guess limits in terms of where they would be looking to invest in? Thank you.
We gave a guideline that the target for the year of starts would be 2.5 million square meters, and we are confident to deliver that number of 2.5 million square meters for the year in China. And the fund is a complement to our existing strategy, so we continue to focus on first coastal areas, first-tier cities, and second-tier cities. It's in line with our investment guideline and strategy.
Sorry, so going forward, will you be providing development start targets then? Because obviously you're doing it on two fronts, number one on your fund and number two on your own balance sheet.
As I mentioned earlier, the fund will have exclusive development for 100% owned projects going forward until we exhaust the capital, which we expect within 3 years. And then on our own balance sheet, we only develop projects that are in joint ventures or acquisitions that are not 100% owned or acquisitions, period.
Okay, got it.
Our development start target always include the wholly owned as well as the asset that we manage.
Yeah.
So that's going to continue.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for your questions. We have a follow-up questions from the line of Donald Chua from CIMB. Please ask your question.
Hi. Sorry for the many questions. I actually have two more. One is really a little bit broader question on the economics of renting versus owning. I think in the past, I think that the transportation costs typically form, if I remember, 40 to 50% of total logistics costs, while your rental cost is 5 to 10%. Has this changed over the years? And where does management see this heading towards? Will the composition of rental costs start to inch up going forward? I think this is the first question. Second question is in terms of opportunity. Where do you see opportunities now? Is it more in the Tier 2 and Tier 3 cities? I understand for the last few quarters, most of the capital deployment is in the Tier 2 or 3. Is Tier 1 getting more too expensive? And what sort of growth expectations when it comes to Tier 2? Is it different from Tier 1? Thanks.
Well, again, our growth is mainly driven by our customer demands. As if you look at our new leases, more than two-thirds of new leases are taken up by our existing customers. So we are basically following our customers and based on meeting their demand. E-commerce, as you can see, is that a lot of the growth from e-commerce are the second-tier cities, and they support not only the second-tier city, but also support the radius that cover also third-tier cities as well. We will continue to see strong demand and also strong development in the first-tier city. So you will see some of the bigger projects we're having announcing upcoming will be in the first-tier cities in a city like Shanghai. The economics on renting versus owning, as I mentioned, even traditional state-owned companies are moving towards renting. One of the things is that if you are running your own logistic company or manufacturing or retailing, if you want to build a warehouse facility and your business is growing at 20% a year, do you build for this year and next year's demand, or you build for the next 5 years? If you build for the next 5 years, that means that the first couple of years is going to be running at a capacity utilization of about 20%. So your return on the invested capital is very low. Now, if you only built to the demand of this year and next year, and your business grow beyond that, you have to have multiple locations to support that one city. That means you have to have two set of management staff, labors, equipments, and inventory. That is not efficient use, and the cost is too high. So it's not just a cost of capital, who has a cheaper cost of capital and who is more efficient. It's more of an operation efficiency and flexibility. Overall, as labor increases over time, the percentage of warehouse as a total percentage of operation will actually decreases because labor is increasing at a higher rate than 6-7% or 10%. Labor in large cities are increasing at 20%. So by definition, the rent as a percentage of total operation will go down.
Thank you for your questions. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. The next question comes from the line of Yu Kang Wong from CLSA. Please ask your question.
Hi, guys. Two questions from me. First one is, when is the next, is there plans for a China stabilized fund? Because I see that you have a stabilized income fund in Japan and in Brazil. So are there plans for one and how long would it take? The second question is on China leasing. Is the momentum sustainable in the next few quarters? Thank you.
Let me answer the first question. Right now, we don't necessarily see the opportunity for a China stabilized fund. Given the dramatic shortage of good quality logistics space and the market leadership position that we have, there's not a whole lot of great product out there to buy. I mean, if we could buy it, we'd clearly be interested in buying great product, but there's not a lot available. So we don't see a significant market opportunity. That will change over time as the market grows bigger and bigger, whether that's 12 months from now, 24 months from now, or 5 years from now, can't tell you today. But eventually, there likely will be a need, but it's not in the immediate future.
On the question on leasing, a lot of that's driven by our completion schedule, but overall we feel confident with 2 million square meter completion, and our leasing will be driven by the availability of the stock. Overall, you're gonna see some fluctuation from quarter to quarter, but overall we will continue to see strong momentum in leasing.
Thank you.
Thank you for your questions. You also have a follow-up question from Michael Lim from UBS. Please ask your question.
Hi, it's me again. Just a follow-up question on Anne's, what Anne asked earlier. You mentioned 2.5 million development starts this year, and then next year you're growing by, say, 20% to 3 million. Am I right in assuming this is both the starts by GLP as well as the China Fund?
Yes, that's total, correct.
Okay. Then when you look at the 1.8 million that the fund has, how quickly can this be kind of executed?
1.8 million, on average, we are developing about, let's say next year, 3 million, and on average, probably 70% of projects are wholly owned. So if you look at that for 1 year,
okay, so, and if I look at the land that you have on your balance sheet, currently in terms of total land area, you've got 3.4 million that's under development in China, and 4.4 that is land bank on your balance sheet. Am I right in assuming that this is, going forward, this is GLP's exclusive development land? And anything that's converted from the land reserve will be offered to the fund.
Yeah, only for projects that are 100% owned by GLP, we offer to the fund, and we expect this fund will support next 2-3 years of capital needs for 100% owned projects. On top of that, we expect tremendous opportunity on the joint ventures and other initiatives as well.
Okay. Maybe if I put it another way, if you look at the land bank that you have currently, is there more that you will offer to the fund?
Based on development schedule and leasing demands, we will continue to contribute or draw down from land reserve.
Actually, if you look at the property under development as well as land held for development, total 7.8 million square meters. So 1.8 million will come from this.
Yeah.
The remaining didn't contribute the fund. It can be a few factors. One, maybe yes, joint ventures, or in a later stage of development, therefore they won't. But then the future land acquisition, if it's no joint venture attached, then that will go directly to the fund.
Okay.
One of the criteria is that the land contributed has to be available for 75% development. So let's say that if we have a big partial land, it's already 50% could develop, and we have another 50% land GFA left, that will still be developed on our own balance sheet.
Okay, so there'll be another $6 million that you will undertake solely from what you have on slide 22.
Well, I wouldn't say solely because some of them are using joint venture already.
Oh, okay.
But yes, we'll continue to develop managed by us. There's only the 1.8 that out of the 7.8. Or contributed and seeded as a kind of logistic fund.
Okay.
Plus the future land acquisitions that are suitable and meet the criteria for the
fund. I mean, obviously, we're seeing a tremendous opportunity, and we're trying to balance our capital requirements over the next 2-3 years, and that's one reason why we developed this, why we closed this fund.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for your question. The last question comes from the line of An Chen from AEW. Please ask your question.
Sorry, I just have a follow-up. I mean, if I look at the investment capacity of $3 billion for your fund and assume a development cost that you've disclosed before, I guess I see you having the capacity to build out maybe 6.8 million to 7 million square meters over a three-year time frame, which is slightly short of what you are even targeting to do this year. And I understand that this is the core of what you aim to do, and there's probably more opportunities on top of this number given the JVs or the projects that you don't own 100% of. But I guess I'm trying to get a sense for how much growth on top of this core development you see yourselves having, given that you've complained about, I guess, being tight on resources, human resources before. If you could just share some of your thoughts on that, that would be great. Thank you.
Well, overall, you know, we committed that the investment period is three years for this new new fund. Again, likelihood will be less than 3 years, as you mentioned. There's two factors that fast we can develop. One is that obviously we will only develop to the need of our customers and the demand, which we think is continue to be very strong. The second thing is that our capability, our team, and we continue to, you know, train, develop, and attract new talent. But again, we want to be a sustainable growth. That's why we committed that we can grow up our development machine 25% a year. You know, we could do 50% 1 year, but it's going to be it's running at, you know, RPM of 8,000, 10,000, which is not healthy for the organization. So what we commit to is that we would provide a sustainable growth. Maybe can we do better? That's something that we're constantly working on and focus on.
Thank you for your questions. The last question comes from the line of Minal Kumar from Standard Chartered. Please ask your question.
Hi, good evening. I just have a question. Could you just talk a bit more on the fundraising process for this new fund? How long did it take you to close the fund? And my second question is just on your 56% co-investment. I noticed that for the earlier funds, you had 30 to 40% stakes. So I'm just wondering why you're choosing to have a higher stake. Is it just because of the demand of the other institutions, or do you just want more control on the China fund? Thank you.
It's not a question of control. And as far as how long this took and how difficult it was, we never did a roadshow to sell to investors. We had every one of these investors came to us, and it was a who's who. They wanted to invest in the China logistics infrastructure area. They wanted to invest with us, and we had an opportunity to create relationships with some of the great, you know, we have relationships now with some of the greatest investors in the world previous to this fund closing, but we enhanced that significantly with the group that joined here. It was an opportunity to do that. Why we take 56% instead of 20 or 30%? Because we think it's a great opportunity and a great investment, and we have the capital to do it. It's not a question of control. In the long run, we can sell down to 30%, but we choose not to today because we want to be part of this in a significant way. We believe in the opportunity. We believe in the profitability. We believe in the demand. We believe in our team, and we believe in the strong, strong growth of domestic consumption in China. So, I mean, it was not, you know, yeah, not to say, you know, when you're working with the best investors in the world, they all are demanding, and they all have, you know, and so it's a, you know, you have to work with them, and you have to work hard to get it closed, but it was not, the hard work was not in attracting investors, because we could have attracted a multiple of this amount of investment had we even done a roadshow to sell this.
I mean, to answer, yeah, we would love to keep the, keep 100% as long as possible if we think we have enough capital to sustain our development and demand. But reality is that the opportunity we're seeing there, we don't have enough capital ourselves.
And, right.
But that's the best way, best of both worlds. We capture as much development profit as possible and then have a right to sell down to 30%
later.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your question. There are no further questions at this time. I'd like to hand the call back to Mr. Jeff Schwartz for closing remarks.
First, thanks, everyone, for dialing in. To summarize, the past 6 months have seen a significant pickup in demand for our facilities, particularly in China. We are hugely excited about the closing of our China Logistics Fund, which will further strengthen our leading position in the region. The opportunities remain compelling in all our markets, thanks to robust domestic consumption, the growth of e-commerce, and the undersupply of modern logistics facilities. Our strong balance sheet and focus on only the world's best markets help ensure that GLP is well positioned for future growth. And Ming and I are committed and more excited than ever about the opportunities and the future of GLP, and excited that we've committed to being with you for an extension of 4 more years beyond our original contracts. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect the line.